Hey, what's up, everyone? I'm Sarah.
I'm Liz.
And this is the It's Fine, I'm Fine podcast. Hello, hello, hello.
Episode 22.
Episode 22.
I want to like start off by saying that this is going to be our season finale, just because it feels interesting, because I remember being a kid and watching like Gilmore Girls and Gossip Girl, and it was always like 22 or 24 was the season finale. I like remember that in my head. I think we've just been going, we literally have been going nonstop since August, and we love this so much, and we don't want it to become something that like lingers over our heads and overwhelms us in a negative way. We want it to be a hobby that we continuously work on and like a passion. And I think that if we continue to go without taking a break, just like with a job or with anything really, without like taking a vacation, it can suffer. So we're totally hopefully gonna start dropping episodes again for season two in a couple weeks, and we'll obviously keep all of our followers and listeners posted on that.
Yep. No, very well said. And just to add on to that, We want to be able to put our everything into this podcast, because it is our passion. It's like our baby. But in order to do that, like, we need to kind of pause, regroup, and then start fresh in a couple of weeks, because we want to put out the best content and we want to be our best selves. And honestly, if we were just talking about, you know, just anything, I think we would probably be fine to just continue. But talking about mental health can be tough at times.
Yeah, for sure.
Because you really have to like dig. It's like therapy. Like, you really have to dig into what you're going through and what you're feeling in order to talk about it. And week after week, I mean, it's amazing and we love it so much, but sometimes you kind of have to be like, okay, I need to take a break, go to therapy, figure myself out for a second, and then I can come back and talk about it again. You know what I mean?
Totally. And I also think like we want to bring on some guests who will, you know, just like add stuff to the podcast. We want to have time to book them. We also want to have time to promote the content that we've already made. I know so many listeners who really like our podcast, but they're just like, I haven't had time.
Right. And people are starting from the beginning, and we have 22 episodes now.
And so they're it's like, it can be intimidating. Yeah. So I think it just has worked out this way, and I feel really good about it. And I think we're going to come back with like a totally fresh perspective on things and bring on some new people, bring on some new ideas.
It is pretty crazy that we've done it 22 weeks in a row
since the summer. Like, I think it's just there's so few things in life that you do that consistently. Like, of course we have our jobs, but this is something we just didn't have to do,
and we don't get paid from this, so it's like, in order to keep it going every week, you really have to have the motivation to. And you know, Liz and I don't live together. Like, this is meet together, find a time once a week, sit down, come up with something that you're going through, talk about it. Like, it's very, it could just be a lot without a break. So I'm glad that we're doing this, because I think that we'll both feel just a lot better about our content in a couple of weeks.
Agreed. And also, another note, the reason this episode is on a Thursday, I'm going to kind of segue into Peak and Pit a little bit, was because Sarah and I had like a long and crazy weekend. We saw Girl with No Job at the Beacon. We hung out with so many Toasters. And then on Sunday was just like a whirlwind.
Very somber day.
And that was when we were gonna record, and we hadn't even really talked about it because we were so overwhelmed. And then we heard the news about Kobe Bryant, which I'll just start, was my pit. Like, I have a lot to say about it, and I don't want to get too much into it. I know this is going to be released Thursday. I don't want to, like, I feel weird because I don't want to say, I don't want to bring down the mood, but like,
it's a very person necessary.
It's like very pertinent and important. And like I've said, I'm going to try to say this in a way that makes sense to people and doesn't sound wrong. There are deaths that happen that are horrible, but in my brain, they make, like, they click. They make sense. Like, no, death is never, like, you can't make sense of it, but it's sort of like, okay, this person dies, and you start to grieve, and you understand it. This one has just, I'm like, how, why? For, like, it's just, he was the most famous name in basketball. Like, besides, you know, LeBron, Dwayne Wade, like, and just retired. Like, it's just his that video of him and his daughter, who also passed away, went viral 2 weeks ago. Like, it felt fake. I didn't believe it. And then it started, I thought it was fake because I just heard from TMZ, and I was like, that's fake. Yeah. But then as soon as I realized, like, people weren't correcting it and saying it was wrong, and other outlets started to pick it up, that's when I started to, like, it just affected me so much. And I don't want to be out here claiming like I'm a basketball fan. I'm really not.
You don't need to be.
But it just was like, it's not. It's like the way that he just impacted so many people, and how unbelievably tragic the story is, not just with his wife who lost a partner and a daughter, but also for the Altobelli family, who both parents, a daughter died and left behind two children. And it's just like, it doesn't make any sense.
It doesn't make any sense. It's so devastating. And I think, I mean, I was watching the Jimmy Kimmel tribute today as well.
Jimmy Fallon?
No, I watched Jimmy Kimmel. Oh, it was Kimmel? Okay. Yeah. Everyone did something. Same, and I watched Ellen as well. And I think they were saying exactly what you just said. Like, no death ever makes sense, and it's always very difficult. But Kobe Bryant was invincible, yeah. It felt like. That's the thing about it. It's not that his death is worse or more sad than another. Of course not. That every human being that leaves this earth it's sad for sure. But it's that people thought he was untouchable. People thought he was invincible. And the fact that someone who we all thought was invincible died so tragically makes you think like life is truly so fragile, and like anything can happen. And it kind of just, it was so unexpected. It was like the last person you ever thought, like,
right.
I think it was Jimmy Kimmel, but someone said like he was the guy that you thought that if that plane crash happened, he was gonna land on his feet. Mm-hmm. Like, it's just, you never thought in a million years that was going to happen to him. And it's just like, it's just so shocking. Like, it doesn't make any sense. And also, not to mention, like, I know we're not really like huge basketball fans, but there are certain things in this world that bring people together, and one of them is sports. And like, Kobe Bryant brought people together. Like, he I was watching old interviews today, because on the Kimmel special, he replayed old interviews that he had with Kobe over all the past like 10, 15 years. And, you know, the whole crowd is just like so united. And it's just like, there are so few things that can bring everyone together in tough times. And sports is really one of them. And Kobe was one of those people that brought people together. And it's just like, it's just so tragic, and it doesn't make any sense, and it's so sad. And on Sunday, like, the thought of Vanessa and their three other kids, it put such a dark cloud over the day.
Yeah.
That, like, you didn't even need to be a basketball fan. It was just a horrible day.
It was a horrible day. I mean, the thing that brought me comfort, especially given, like, what you and I try to do, and I talked about this a lot in therapy yesterday, was like, it brought me comfort knowing that so many people were showing vulnerability. Mm-hmm. Like, if we got anything from this, like, you know, as like a mental health conversation, mm-hmm. seeing like Justin Sylvester on TV like breaking down, obviously was so jarring and upsetting, but I felt so much comfort in knowing that people can feel comfortable like expressing grief. It's like, you know, people try to hide it so often, and mm-hmm. I'm not like happy, but I'm comforted. I think that's a good word to use.
Yeah.
So I guess onto other things, but we're keeping that in our mind. It's been on my mind all week.
Same.
The peak that happened before that, it's okay. I think if we have the same peak, maybe this week, because it was
for sure
so like important.
It was such a peak.
We saw we're obviously big Toasters. We saw Girl with No Job at the Beacon Theater. And it was just like such an insane night for so many reasons.
And sorry to interrupt you, but if you're listening and you don't know what a toaster is, Girl With No Job is a podcast called The Morning Toast with her sister Jackie. And they refer to their fans of The Morning Toast as toasters. And that's what we refer to ourselves as.
So. Exactly. And we got to hang out with so many toasters like from far and wide all across the country all weekend. It was just so fun. And Sarah and I are both going to Camp Toast, and like, we're excited about that now even more because we got to kind of get a taste of what that's like. I went last year, and I'm just so excited that me, Sarah, and Alana are all going this year. I'll talk a little bit more about the weekend as the episode goes on, because it has a lot to do with what we're going to talk about.
Totally.
Yeah.
My pit and peak of the week, aside from, of course, what we just discussed with Kobe, which was very sad and is still very sad, my personal pit was that I taught my very first C2, which is the more advanced like hot yoga class at my the yoga studio that I teach at. And while that seems like that would be a peak, the only reason why it was a pit was because, again, this is another peak, but my class was full. Like, there were 32 people in my class. Mm. It was literally, and also the studio just opened. So right. It was 32 people. There was a wait list to get into my class. It was mat to mat packed. Like, it was so packed.
Oh my
and
God.
I was really excited about it. But then suddenly the fact that I was like teaching a room of 32 people, my first time teaching the C2, like, it's just like a heated class and it's a little bit faster. It was just like scary and I got a little bit flustered. And so I messed up a couple of times during the class. I mean, everyone I spoke to afterwards who I'm like friends with was like, yeah, you messed up a couple of times. But like, first of all, no one noticed. And second of all, you like kept your cool and you were very confident about it and you just kept going. All I can hope for is that like, if I do mess up, that I don't freak out. Mm-hmm. Like the fact that I was able to keep my cool and just, you know, like at one point I forgot to say airplane pose. And I said, you know what? We're going to go to airplane. Like I was cool about it.
Yeah.
And to me, like that is a positive that came out of the pit because although I'm really hard on myself and I was really unhappy that I messed up a couple of times. At the end of the day, like all I want is to make sure that my students feel like supported in the class and that they don't feel like their yoga teacher like doesn't know what she's doing. Mm-hmm. Like you want to feel like your teacher is leading you and guiding you and you don't want to feel like who am I trusting with my body movements for the next hour, you know?
Right. Or you also don't want to feel like they're distracted or like you don't want to be distracted if they mess up, because even though you know like someone is human, I've certainly been in a class where I like notice something and then I'm thinking about it. And you never want to, mm-hmm. as an instructor, be in a position to make like the people at your class feel that way. Mm-hmm. But it sounds like you did a really good job just like picking it up and kind of, you, I don't know, you have character. Mm-hmm. And I think that's really important in a teacher. Like you don't want to be a robot.
Right.
You know?
Right.
Especially a yoga teacher.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. It just felt nice to hear my friends say like you really kept your composure and you just kept going. And they said that I started the class really strong. So I was able to like get their trust from the beginning, mm-hmm. so that later on in the class when I did mess up, like no one panicked. They were just like, oh, okay, like sure, we'll do what she says. Like, and when I say mess up, I mean like I accidentally did the right side twice and then I did the left side.
Yeah.
You're supposed to do right and then left.
Yeah.
So it wasn't like the end of the world, but I guess then my peak, aside from the beacon, which I'll get into a little bit as the episode goes on, but my peak was at the following day. I taught the same class again at 6:30 a.m.
Wow, Monday morning.
And I crushed it. And everyone left my class feeling really good. And like, I didn't even ask. And people were like, that was really great. Thank you. Like, I feel so refreshed. I'm ready for the day. And like, I was like, this is awesome. Like, if I can even do that for one person, then like my day is made. So yeah, that was my peak. And aside from that, the Beacon Theater was amazing. Met so many amazing toasters and just had a blast.
A good old time. So to transition a little bit, I think we're going to talk about rejection today. And the reason that I want to talk about it is because I was rejected from something. And I actually was thinking about it because, you know, when I consider topics, I want to make sure that like both of us have something to say. And while sometimes you come up with a topic and sometimes I do, it's important that it's like also something in your life. Mm-hmm. And not to like put words in your mouth or make you feel like more anxious, but I think like one thing that you experience a lot is fear of losing people. And I do think that's also fear of rejection in a lot of ways.
Absolutely.
And I have realized that like rejection is at its core to me, like fear of rejection is actually fear about the way I feel about myself, because even though there's another person involved, I'm like, well, what does that say about me? And I think just to start off, like something that I've learned over the past few days is that it's interesting that we place so much value in, like we think that being rejected from something is a reflection of us, when in reality there's another player involved and like there's so many other factors. Mm-hmm. If you're rejected by a job, a school, a boy, a friend, they're like, that's another entity. And so using it to define who you are is not always good. you can absolutely learn things about yourself from it, and it hurts. But I interestingly didn't choose this as my pit. I mean, of course, there was a horrible thing that happened, and it was my pit, way worse than getting rejected. But I had never planned on using this as my pit because I feel really proud of myself. I talked several weeks ago about getting into a law school and getting scholarship money. And last week I found out that I didn't get into one of the schools that I had thought was my dream school. And I fortunately had spent a lot of time in therapy mapping that out and like what that would look like with my therapist and what I would feel if that happened. I had an idea it would happen because I hadn't heard from the school, and that's usually not a good sign. And I think I handled it really well. I almost to the point where I was like, why am I not more anxious? Which is a classic spiral mm-hmm. that a lot of us anxious people often experience. Mm-hmm. But I basically, I like found out while I was at work on Friday, and immediately, like, I did start crying because I wasn't upset that like I didn't get in. I mean, I'm still processing the way that I felt. I was more just overwhelmed by it, and I knew that if I got in or I didn't get in, like, all the buildup was gonna like spark emotion. So I got a little bit upset, and I immediately called my parents and texted my boyfriend, and I spoke to my dad for like 45 minutes. I just like went into another office, and we had a whole conversation about like what this means, what I had planned on doing even before I got this rejection. Like, I'm sure a lot of the podcast listeners probably know that I've been a little bit confused about what I want to do, and I had made the decision days before that like I didn't think law school was for me. So I felt really good that I wasn't that I had already had something else in my pocket, and that I didn't get this rejection and immediately think, actually, wow, I'm stupid. I don't care if I didn't want to go to law school, because now mm-hmm. that just means like I'm dumb. They said no to me. Mm-hmm. And we can talk a little bit more about it, but I just like, it's another reason to advocate for therapy, because thanks to someone I work with, like, I was really able to assess what a rejection means. And I think I kind of relate a little bit about that, like, when I started talking about it. But I don't know, have you like experienced that recently in the same way, different way?
Yeah, I think that fear of rejection is like my biggest fear. Like, yeah. I know we say that fear of losing people is my biggest fear, but that comes from a fear of rejection.
Right.
That's the stem of it, is a fear of rejection. Feeling like I'm unlovable or
not good enough.
Yeah, that's just like a fear of mine. And because when I get scared about losing people, what does that really mean? It means that my brain is automatically going to go to what's wrong with me, or mm-hmm. what did I do wrong? I used to spend so much time going over every relationship in my life in my head to try and see if there were any signs that like someone was like maybe I did something or someone was mad at me. So I always used to ask everyone, like, are you mad at me? Are you mad at me? And like, people always were like, no, why would I be mad at you? But like, I always just wanted to make sure I was doing everything I possibly could to the best of my ability to make sure I was never the one that was going to get rejected, or like someone wasn't going to want to stop being my friend. Like, even just friendships. Like, I was always anxious about my friendships because I was scared that I wasn't doing enough. And then like that kind of led me into being kind of like a pushover, like letting people walk all over me and always being the one to apologize, never standing my ground, because I was so scared of someone rejecting me. And like, when you're really scared of someone rejecting you, you forget, as you said, that they're also their own person with things going on in their life, and it's not all about you. And like, I feel like it, in my head, everything became about like what I'm doing wrong, or like what I could be doing wrong, as opposed to like, how is this relationship? How are they doing in their life? Like, you know what I mean?
Yeah, of course.
So, and as you said, therapy has helped me so much. I feel like a different person. Like, genuinely, in the last 2 years, I have completely changed as a friend, as a girlfriend, as a daughter. Like, in all of the relationships in my life, I have stopped looking at it as like, am I doing everything right? And started looking at it as like, what do they need for support in their own life? Not because I'm scared of losing them or getting rejected, but because I want to be supportive of them, like kind mm-hmm. of shifting it. And also knowing that like, we're all humans, and everyone makes mistakes, and no one is perfect, and no one's going to stop being my friend if I like mess up one thing once in a while. Because I think I hope that I've made it clear to my friends that my intention is pure and my intention is to be the best friend that I can be. And I know that my friends feel that way too. Like, I would never want to just stop being their friend if they did something, like, you know, annoying, because I know what their intentions are and their intentions are pure. So it's been a journey, but I've just, I've definitely struggled with the fear of rejection, and I think I've progressed a lot in this, in terms of like my friendships. I'm still working on like relationships with guys. I think that I get into things, and if it ends for reasons that have nothing to do with me and like how they felt about me, my instinct is to say, okay, well, what could I have done differently, or like, what's wrong with me?
Yeah.
But you know, I don't want to get into too much detail, but like, this did happen to me recently, and like, I've actually, like, for the first time in ever, just kind of been like okay with it, because I know that I did the best that I could, and I know that it's not, like, even if it was about me, like, that doesn't make me a bad person, mm-hmm. and that doesn't make me unlovable. It maybe just wasn't a good fit, or maybe there were life factors. I don't know. Whatever it was, I'm really working on not putting all the blame on myself, because, as you said, like, it's two parties. It's not just one.
Right.
So it's not just like all my fault all the time.
Mm-hmm.
But it's hard. It's really hard.
I had a really interesting conversation with my therapist yesterday about anxiety in general, and how managing it is really the best word that you can use to explain what you're trying to do in therapy. You're not trying to get rid of it. If we didn't have anxiety, like, we wouldn't be able to learn anything. Mm-hmm. We have to have some anxiety. A little anxiety is healthy. It teaches us, like, what's good, what's safe. Even sometimes people can use anxiety to, like, for a rush almost. Like, I need to feel nervous because then it's like a roller coaster. Mm-hmm. I need to feel nervous because then, like, I'll feel really good when I accomplish something. And similarly with rejection, it can teach you so much about yourself. And, you know, maybe you were in a friendship and you did something that wasn't cool, and the other person rightfully was like, I need to distance myself from you, and you learn. Or maybe mm-hmm. it teaches you that person had something going on, and I need to be mindful that when I'm in a relationship with someone else, that I am aware of things that, like, might tick, you know, that might be going on with them. Definitely. You know what I mean? Like, definitely. I don't think that we shouldn't experience rejection. Absolutely. I think it's incredibly important. If we got everything we wanted in life, there would be no ups and downs. And with no ups and downs, there would be no fullness, no happiness, no, like, general understanding of what is supposed to happen for us. Mm-hmm. And I do believe that with the rejection that I got from the school, the reason that I took it more lightly than I would have otherwise was because it was like the final nail in the coffin of something that I don't think I really wanted to do anyway. Mm-hmm. And granted, if I had still wanted to do it, it would have been a different situation. So I feel fortunate that, like, my timeline had aligned decently so that I didn't feel as bad when it happened. But, you know, I think even if I hadn't gotten in and I was dying to go, that would have been a sign too. Like, hey, maybe, you know, those little things that you're thinking about, maybe not going.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Like, this is a sign that maybe that's okay. This mm-hmm. the school that you thought was what you wanted didn't want you to go there. Mm-hmm. And so, like, maybe you have to pivot to do something else.
Mm-hmm.
Regardless of, like, where I actually was in my journey with that, it really, I felt like, taught me something, mm-hmm. you know?
Yeah. I think that all of the times in my life that I've been anxious about losing people or having this fear of rejection, like, it has taught me so much. It's about how to be a good friend without feeling like I need to do everything for everyone and never think about myself. Mm-hmm. I've really learned how to think about myself. And yeah, I think that having anxiety can definitely teach you a lot of lessons. But also learning how to get through the anxiety can also teach you a lot of lessons. You know what? Does that make sense? Like, I think
totally.
Like, the fact that we both go to therapy and we learn how to work through our anxiety has taught us how to look at the anxiety in a different way.
Yeah.
Whereas, like, I used to look at my anxiety and just be like, okay, well, now I'm stuck here. Whereas, like, I feel like we've really put the work in to get the lessons out of, like, what does this mean? And, like, the progression has happened because we've put the work in to it, you know?
Yeah. It's interesting that we're obviously talking about rejection, but we're talking a lot about anxiety too. And that's, like, the crux of our
mm-hmm.
podcast. I think it's like, I don't think anxiety is the enemy. at all, actually. Like, I think it can be, it's almost like this obstacle that's placed in front of us, and it can really teach us and like propel us forward, or it can hinder us. And I think the enemy is like the inclination to combat anxiety in an unhealthy way. Like, I know that's a really long-winded way of saying,
I hear that,
you know, like the enemy isn't the thing that's like scaring us. It's the idea that what we use to combat the thing that scares us can really be bad. Not to toot our own horns, but like, I think looking at our anxiety has really allowed us to be more well-rounded people with fuller mm-hmm. lives, because we're able to see some anxieties as reasonable. You know, if you're anxious that about your career and what you're passionate about, good. Like, you want to find something that is more fulfilling to you. If you're anxious that, you know, you're never going to find someone to marry, okay, what's reasonable about that and what's not? Like, looking at it in the face and understanding why some of it is helpful and some of it's not. That's a really long way, winded way of saying, I think anxiety can really help us, and I think it can be hurtful. And I think the thing that we're trying to work on is how we deal with it, you
mm-hmm,
know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think for me personally, when I experience anxiety, my brain creates all of these stories. Like, mm-hmm. I know we make jokes about like fiction novels, but truly, like, I come up with all of these scenarios in my head. And that's kind of where it gets problematic for me, is like, I convince myself that I already know the future for me, like as if I'm not so Raven.
Yeah.
Like, I literally think my brain, my anxiety kicks in. And while the anxiety can be, I'm starting to learn how to look at the anxiety and say, what does this mean? And I'm trying to slow down my process of thinking so that it's not jumping to conclusions. You're right. Having anxiety can teach you so much, and learning to look at it in the eye and say, what does this mean? And where can I go from here with this fear can be a great like learning lesson. But my brain tends to just jump to conclusions, and then I convince myself that like I already know the future. There's no convincing me otherwise. Like, I'm gonna be alone forever. If this person doesn't like me, who's ever gonna like me? Or like, if this job doesn't want me, what job will I ever get? And that's kind of like the battle I'm fighting right now, because it's not good for me to listen to those stories. And I'm kind of like working, not to say that my anxiety is the enemy, but I'm like fighting it, because I'm when it comes up, because sometimes it just comes up, I just get anxious out of nowhere. I need to like slow it down and stop letting it just like convince me of all these things and be like, this is the anxiety talking right now. Take a step back, look at what's happening, look at what your brain is telling you, what does it mean? So, right. Like, slow it down and not look at the anxiety as, like, the end-all be-all, you know?
Mm-hmm. And just assessing, like, what's trying to protect you and what is your brain basically, like, what signals are your brain sending that actually aren't based in reality?
Mm-hmm.
Like, anxiety, I think, was meant biologically to protect people.
Yes.
Like, exactly. How do we keep ourselves safe, yes. Keep our children safe, keep our parents safe, keep our away from predators.
Yes.
But now, like, we haven't, you know, humans have changed so much over such a short period of time, and like our bodies haven't evolved to understand that sometimes anxiety is like an unreasonable thing. So when we're sitting at our desk job, we still get those signals in our brain despite not actually being around like predators or direct threats to our lives. And exactly. But we still feel that same anxiety sometimes.
Unsafe feeling.
And almost, I maybe have talked about this a little bit, but like when I had a panic attack for the first time, my dad, I don't know if this is something he learned like when he was in med school or just from his experience like dealing with people who go through this, but he was like, you're not gonna die. And that mm-hmm. really shook me, because not only did it help, but I have reflected on it so much in a way that's like, when you have a panic attack, it's your body telling you like you're mm-hmm. in danger.
Mm-hmm.
And
you're literally, this is the exact conversation I had with my therapist last week.
Were you having like a
I was really anxious, and she kept saying to me, your brain is telling you that you're in danger, that you're unsafe. You're not unsafe. You're okay. And that my brain associates rejection with being unsafe.
Right.
So when I feel like A, I'm getting rejected, B, it's in the process of happening or it might happen soon, my brain is like panic mode, you're unsafe. And like the anxiety kicks in and it's just like, it truly feels like the end of the world. And that's why people say like, it's not the end of the world, but it's like, that's what it feels like. It right. feels like it's the end of the world. So that's why if you slow down the thinking and you, because I actually learned last week that when your brain is sending signals about what's happening, it takes the longest for the signal to get to the forefront of your brain because it starts in the back where your spine is.
Uh-huh.
Your spine holds all the tension and emotion.
Yeah.
So when it kicks in, the signal happens, it takes the longest for it to get to the forefront of the brain. And then the part of your brain that like registers it as something unsafe is in the middle of your brain. So that happens first. And then before it can get to the rational thinking, it's like danger, danger, danger. So like you think that you might not get into a school or you don't get into a school. And it's like you want to, your brain wants to be like, what does this mean? Like
right.
It's unsafe. It's bad. It's a bad situation. But the fact that you were able to prepare for what would happen if you didn't get in, you spent so much time developing the rational thoughts at the front of your brain that like when it actually happened, you were like, I've already processed this and I know I'm not in an unsafe place.
Right.
Which is awesome.
Right.
You know?
It's like running. It's the same thing people do when they play sports or like run drills. It's mm-hmm. the Navy SEAL training, I think, is like they basically put you in the absolute most dangerous situations. Like people die in training, not just, you know, on the mm-hmm. battlefield. In fact, oftentimes the actual battlefields are less dangerous.
Wow. I didn't know that.
Because they're trying to like prepare you at top notch that when you actually go into a situation where it really is life or death, like you are prepared and you're not afraid.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously I'm not an advocate for like therapy being that extreme, but to a very small extent, if you talk like when one of the first episodes you talked about your therapist saying, and then what,
yep.
and then what, if you talk through the worst case scenarios in your brain and something even like mildly on the route to that worst case mm-hmm. scenario happens, you will have already talked through the worst thing that could happen. And so your brain is trained to like assess that horrible mm-hmm. thing. When something less bad happens, it's easier every time. So
right.
as hard as it is to look your worst fear in the face, like that anxiety, mm-hmm. it can also be really helpful so that when actual very, very small threats
mm-hmm.
are in your life, it's like a no-brainer that you're going to be okay.
Right.
Because the small threat is like you didn't get a job that you wanted or didn't get into a school. The big threat, of course, is mortality, which is like something that I think we all at our core are really afraid of, though mm-hmm. it manifests itself in different ways. So when you're dealing with like the absolute worst fears of people in your life going away and all these things, like and the smaller things happen, you can really just train yourself to get through those moments much, much more easily. And also, even when those really scary moments happen, having a crutch to have leaned on, it's never going to be easy, but preparing yourself for things, you know, by working in therapy, by building relationships with people, can make those moments more manageable, mm-hmm. I think.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Totally.
I'm not saying like, oh, we should all prepare for the worst thing, think about it all the time, but more like, you know, continuing to work on your fears mm-hmm. and like
yes.
assessing them in therapy
well
with friends,
yes.
writing them down, you know?
Exactly. That's exactly right. And like, I completely agree. I think it's really important to work through your fears, at least talk through them and not run around and always think worst case scenario, but also be realistic about what your fears mean. And like, if the worst case scenario did happen, like, would you be okay? And at the end of the day, you kind of realized every time you kind of realize while talking through your fears, just from experience, like if you keep saying and then what, and then what, and then what, like life does go on, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And that's not to just be like, get over it, life goes on. Like,
right.
But it's important to talk through what these fears really mean, because once you get to the core of it, you're like, is this realistic? I can only really speak to my own experience.
Right.
And so what I mean by that is, I am so scared of getting rejected from friends, family, relationships. And like at the end, like I'm still trying to figure out why that scares me so much, because rejections happen all the time. I've lost friends in my life. I've lost boyfriends. Like I've lost people in my life, and I've been happy afterwards.
Right.
So I'm trying to understand like where the fear really comes from. Is it just that I'm scared of being alone? Is it because I don't trust myself? I don't love myself as much as I should? Is it like a personal insecurity? So I'm still trying to understand like what it means. But it always comes from somewhere, because I don't want to always rock around being like, okay, like I might lose this person. I might lose. It gets like exhausting, and I have to understand like what the anxiety is telling me so that I can actually work on. Maybe if this is just about like me not loving myself enough, then that's what I have to work on.
Right.
So the anxiety is teaching me something.
Right.
It's just a long way of saying that. Yeah, kind of just saying what you were saying before.
No, but it's a different, I think that's important that like we share similar thoughts, but we always have different perspectives.
Yeah.
I wanted to talk a little bit more, like speaking of talking about like putting fear right in your face, but the series of unfortunate events that happened this weekend, no, it was actually really fortunate, was I basically like found out about the school Friday and then immediately like hung out with everyone. And I wasn't saying like, I'm just going to put this behind me and go drink. I was very like, good. I can't explain it except for the community that I've been surrounding myself more with has been the type of people that I actually care about what they think of me, and the way that they assess like how they think of me has very little to do with what school I go to and where I get in. And sure, it's like fun sometimes for people to be like, oh, she went to this school, but at the end of the day, like I don't consider where people went to school when I'm assessing like what type of person they are.
Right.
It's a good conversation starter. If I know you went to a school that I have a friend who went there, if I know you went to a school that's like, if you went to Harvard, it's like, ooh, she's smart. But like, you could also be an asshole and like, spoiler alert, you probably are. Just kidding. No, I'm just totally
kidding. And people forget 2 seconds later.
No, people literally forget.
It's only about what you think of yourself.
And so the point was just, it felt very kismet that like, I was going to have this weekend with so many people from all different walks of life. Like some of them are stay-at-home moms. Some of them are entrepreneurs. Some of them didn't go to college. Some of them went to amazing colleges. Some of them like are in college. Like truly so many different types of people who only see like, I'm a kind person. I'm a positive person. I'm a good writer. Like that does matter to me that I'm a good writer, that that's a quality I have. But like I could be a good writer and have not gone to the school that I went to.
Right.
So intellect doesn't have to be defined by like the school that accepts me or doesn't. And I felt so comfortable being around people who felt who really feel that way and like honestly don't even consider it as much as I do because they didn't have the same experience like in school and my upbringing around all these well-to-do kids who literally only care about their grades and are horrible at social interactions. So I'm proud of myself that I have a decent social capacity over everything else and that I care about people over everything else. And I just want to remind people that like it's really easier said than done. I know that, but as we've been saying, rejection is like a two-party thing, whether the other entity is a school, a boy, a friend, whatever it may be. And like it happens for a reason, whether it's to teach you something about yourself or because like it simply wasn't supposed to happen because you were never supposed to be at that school. They had too many people apply that like had really good numbers and had really good stories and maybe seemed like they wanted to be lawyers more. Then that's what was meant to be.
Totally.
And I hope that my ability to kind of process this in a relatively healthy way inspires people to work on it and like
relatively put yourself healthy.
Yeah, in a healthy way.
Very healthy way.
Very healthy. Like I hope it inspires people to put yourself out there more and like really assess what the worst case scenario is so that you can like, you know, aim for the moon.
I have to say, I am like very, very proud of you.
Thank you.
I think that it's a huge accomplishment that you're able to have this mindset, not because getting rejected from this school means anything, but because I know how easy it can be to fall into a pattern of saying what's wrong with me,
right?
Or like, what could I have done better? Like, it's so easy to go to that route. And like, the fact that you didn't is very admirable and like something I'm working on. And you're absolutely right. Like just because you didn't get in, first of all, getting into schools in the first place is a crapshoot. And you could be the perfect student with the perfect grades and you did everything right and you still might not get in.
Right.
So it really is a crapshoot. But also like you are reminding yourself that like, getting into a school doesn't define you. Like, it doesn't tell you. And I think that in my experiences, like, I let rejections define me, and they shouldn't. And I'm working on that. So I think it's great, you know?
I do. I don't think you let them define you. I think you fear that they will. But I am here, like, as your friend telling you that I don't think you, like, wear a scarlet letter on your, or like wear a, yeah, like wear a scarlet letter on your chest saying, I like, I was rejected. But I do think it's a big part of you and your existence is being able to talk about what you go through. But like,
yeah,
I don't want you to ever feel like what they do define you, because no, they don't.
What I mean is that, like, you're right. It's the fear. You're right. You're right. It's more so that I get scared of the rejection because I'm scared that that's going to, I'm going to start telling myself things about, like, I'm going to start believing things about myself that aren't true.
Right.
And, you know, I always have been able to get back up and find myself again and remind myself, like, who I am and what I like about myself. But I definitely, like, go through periods of time where if I lose a friend, or, like, I remember a couple months ago, like, I lost a friend in my life. I think after that, I spent, like, a couple weeks being like, why would this person want to be my friend? Like, I was so annoying, or like, I did this, I did that. Like, I just put a lot of blame on myself. So it's not like I let it define me, but like, I start questioning, like, who I am.
You are, yeah.
Going off of what you were saying, like, it's just important to work on not letting a rejection or a lost friend or a rejection letter from a school, like, not letting that tell you stories about yourself that aren't true, you know, because there is someone or something that's on the other side with other factors, and letting that tell you stories about yourself will only, like, set you back.
Yeah, you know? It won't propel you forward.
It won't propel you forward. And if you want to say, like, okay, well, what can I do better? That's fine. Mm-hmm. You can definitely learn lessons and, like, say, what could I have done better? What can I do better? But not letting it tell you stories. Like, I guess I'm just taking it from my own experience, but, like, not letting your brain tell you stories about what your whole future looks like now that you didn't get this thing, or that you lost this person. Like, not letting it tell you what your whole life is going to look like now. Just say, okay, I learned this lesson. How can I take this and do better and improve? And that's the best we can do as humans. But just remind yourself that fear of rejection should never hold you back, because at the end of the day, you'll learn a lesson from it, whether you succeed or not.
Agreed. We encourage everyone, I guess, listening, to put yourself out there more and to try to not fear rejection. It's inevitable that we fear it, but having a fear that's manageable, I think, is the way to really get through, not just get through challenges, but, like, challenge ourselves to be better. We don't want to, like, just get away from challenges. We want to experience them so we can grow.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, never doing anything because you're scared of getting rejected is really no way to live life.
Right.
And
I tell myself as I go back on Hinge.
Yeah, exactly. Start swiping. Anyway. Thank you all so much for being supporters of us, for listening to our podcast, for taking the messages that we say and implementing them in some way and telling us. That's always really meaningful. Mm-hmm. We've had a couple people reach out to us saying, like, they're starting therapy, or thank you for talking about this because I was really going through it this week and it just meant so much to me. So that, like, really keeps us going, and we're so excited to keep working on the pod and, like, promoting episodes that we've already done, starting to build new ones, starting mm-hmm. to build more of our brand and the podcast in general, and
continuing to grow a community of people who want to learn more about themselves, want to learn more about mental health. Like, that's just what we love to do. Like, we love to see that others are beginning to invest in themselves and also, like, continue the conversation around mental health, because that's really what the goal is here. And the fact that, like, even this weekend at the Beacon, the fact that we were able to have open conversations with so many people about mental health and just therapy and how we're feeling, and it's just, like, really exciting. I just feel like things are shifting where it's not taboo anymore, and that's really nice to see, and I hope it continues to go that way so that we can all continue to support each other openly and not ever have to feel like we are alone in something or ever have to feel like you're the only one going through something. Like it felt really nice to hear Toasters this weekend come up to us and say like, oh, I loved that episode. Like I finally don't feel like I'm alone in this. Like that is amazing because you're not alone. And Liz and I love you all.
We really do.
And we are so thankful for the support.
So with that, make sure you follow us at It's Fine, I'm Fine Pod. You can find all the updates about the podcast. Some fun content is there. You can follow me on Instagram at Liz Height.
You can follow me at Sarah L. Sassone. That's N like Nancy. Nancy. And if you unfollow me, I'm going to try and be okay with the rejection.
We hope you all have a tremendous rest of your month, next couple weeks. Mm-hmm. We will see you soon. And
oh my gosh, it's the season finale. Oh, wait, I just want to say one more thing.
Please do.
I think we'll be back Valentine's Day week.
Yeah, I think that's like a Thursday. So,
like, don't you worry about feeling nervous rejected for that holiday, because I am right there with you. So we will be back that week. Okay. And we can't wait.
Can't wait.
You had anything else to think?
No, I'm waiting for the with that.
And with that, I'm Sarah.
Season finale. Hi, what's up, guys?
Hey, what's up, everyone? I'm Sarah.
This is a prank.
We just started another episode. Today we're gonna be talking about, it's like a 4-hour episode. Okay. With that, it's fine. I'm fine.
It's fine. I'm fine.
Wait, no, I kind of said it weird.
I did too. It that was weird. Okay, go ahead.
Nervous about a season finale. With that, it's fine. I'm fine.
It's fine. I'm fine.
Big high five.
Bye.
Clear me hands. Bye.